Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. Here are your hosts, Bill Kennard and Tom Grandy.
Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. I'm Bill Kennard, along with our company's founder, Tom Grandy. This program is entitled Hall of Horrors, How to Avoid Multi-Million Dollar Hiring Lawsuits by Sandy Steinman. Tom, you've been doing this for a long time. Just how important are background checks when it comes to hiring new employees?
Bill, this is one of those eye-opening presentations that leaves you thinking, gee, I had no idea the potential lawsuits we were opening ourselves up for by not performing background checks. The Fair Credit Reporting Act requires the employer to provide a written release and obtain a signed disclosure from the applicant before requesting a background check. And the release must be a standalone document. It can't just be among the other application paperwork. Sandy not only explains several important aspects of the Fair Credit Reporting Act, he makes the listener fully aware of why a background check needs to be run on all prospective employees. Get this, Bill. 40% of all applicants' past employment history and reference checks are false. 45% of the checks reveal judgments, liens, or bankruptcies. And 36% of the applicants show driving violations and or convictions. That is why background checks must be run. Bill Sandy also provided several practical tips that small business owners can use. Are there any that stood out for you?
Well, there sure were, Tom. One that caught my attention was his suggestion of posting a sign in the area where potential employees are filling out their applications. This sign simply says, "We run background checks on all applicants prior to hiring." Sandy says that that alone will immediately reduce the number of people filling out applications. That should tell you something. Tom, Sandy began his business career within a certified public accounting firm. Since then, he has owned and successfully operated several small companies in the transportation, service, and food industries. He also spent several years as a senior consultant for a large national consulting company specializing in small and medium-sized troubled businesses. Sandy tells a story about his first consulting project. The company was operated by two brothers and had absorbed several years of large losses. The project was extremely successful, and the company had become profitable on the last day of the project. The two brothers hugged him and told him that he had changed their lives. At that point, he was hooked and knew that he would spend the rest of his life making small businesses more profitable. He ultimately founded Profitability Partners, Inc., a Florida-based consulting company specializing in the turnaround of small and medium-sized businesses. In that same year, one of Sandy's clients was named as a plaintiff in a negligent hiring lawsuit. After seeing the time and expense involved in defending these types of cases, Sandy founded and became president of Background Checks Express, Incorporated. The sole mission of his company is to assist businesses in performing due diligence during the hiring process and to prevent them from becoming defendants in these types of lawsuits, as well as helping them make the right hiring decisions. And now, with the Hall of Horrors, How to Avoid Multi-Million Dollar Hiring Lawsuits, here's Sandy Steinman with this month's Prophet University audio series presentation.
Thanks for joining us today. If you're an employer or are responsible for hiring, our subject today can be the difference between your company surviving or not surviving. I hope to open your eyes to the very real dangers that lurk out there for employers who don't perform background checks before they hire an applicant, as well as for employers who do perform background checks. Sounds like a darned if you do and darned if you don't situation, but we'll also talk about how you avoid those dangers. First, I have a riddle for you. What do you call an employer who does not background check their applicants before making an employment offer? Give up? Well, the answer is you call them a defendant. Sounds ominous. Perhaps, but it's also the truth. To illustrate my point, let's pay a visit to what I call the Employer's Hall of Horrors. Let's begin our stroll through the Employer's Hall of Horrors in South Florida. Burdine's, a division of Federated Department Stores, contracted with an HVAC company to provide service to Burdine's customers. I have no question but what Burdine's thoroughly vetted the heating and air company before contracting with them. A woman called Burdine's and told them that she wanted her air conditioning ducts cleaned. The air conditioning company sent two men to her home. Unknown to her or to Burdine's, both men had criminal records. the heating and air company had decided to shortcut the background checking process, and so these two felons were turned loose on the community. One of the men, a twice-convicted sex offender out on parole, returned to the woman's home 6 months later. Now, why do you think he returned to the woman's home? The obvious answer is to check to be sure that his work was satisfactory, but that would be wrong. He actually returned to her home to rape her and then kill her. Because the air conditioning contractor had never bothered to perform a background check on his employees, it cost the customer her life, and it cost Burdine somewhere in the neighborhood of $16 million to settle a negligent hiring lawsuit. And of course, the heating and air company closed their doors and was never heard from again. So what do you think? Pretty scary? Let's keep going down this hall. Let's move to the story of a carpet cleaning firm in California. This particular carpet cleaning firm hired its employees with no background checking as long as the employee looked good to the manager. In 1998, a newly hired employee was sent into homes to clean carpets. He ultimately murdered one of his customers. The family filed a negligent hiring lawsuit, and in the course of discovery, it was uncovered that this employee had been convicted of violent crimes, and the fact is a simple background check would have uncovered the same thing. This case was settled for over $9 million. Here's a case that doesn't involve a lawsuit, but it's plenty scary anyway. A bookkeeper with a criminal file a foot thick stole $2.5 million from 15 to 20 businesses over a 12-year time span. How, you may ask, was he able to get those jobs? It was simple. An accomplice who he met while serving time in prison for fraud gave glowing recommendations to anyone who called the reference number listed on the resume. Along the same lines, but certainly deserving to be in the Hall of Horrors, was the case of the consultant who hired a bookkeeper based on chemistry who took over $70,000 from her business bank account and family savings account. And while we're in this wing of the hall, we can't leave without letting me tell you about the story of Milton. I was a young chief financial officer for a publicly held chain of restaurants. We were in the middle of a turnaround, and as a result, had terminated many of our support employees. And I needed an accounts payable person, and I needed that person now. Enter Milton. Milton came from a temp service, and he was perfect. He was about 45 years old. He was from Connecticut. I was from Connecticut. We got along famously, and I hired him without any background checking. After all, I'm a great judge of character, so why bother with a background check? Milton was the perfect employee for about 45 days. And then I started getting calls from vendors who wanted to know why they hadn't been paid. I knew I had approved checks, and I had signed the checks. What I didn't know was that Milton was whiting out the payee and putting in his own name. What I didn't know was Milton had recently served 10 years in the penitentiary for embezzlement, and all of these things that I didn't know cost our company well over $50,000. I don't know to this day why the board of directors didn't just toss me out on the street for my stupidity. Let's move along through the hall until we come to the case of the flagship hotel in Galveston, Texas. In 2008, they hired a bellman. Sounds pretty normal, right? Well, here's the problem. They didn't perform any background check. It gets worse. Run the clock 3 months forward, and a father and his two sons check into the hotel, which bills itself as a family-friendly hotel. The newly hired bellman lured the 15-year-old son into an empty banquet room and attempted to molest him. And of course, there's more. Had the hotel performed even a rudimentary background check, they would have found that their employee had convictions for theft, assault, drug possession, and yep, you guessed it, two counts of indecency with a child. And he'd been cited six other times for sexual misconduct. The Texas Court of Appeals has recently ruled that indeed, the family does have a case of negligent hiring against the hotel. And while the verdict is still out, you can be sure this is a multi-million dollar verdict, and that doesn't include the legal costs and the time lost for hotel management. A trip through the Hall of Horrors wouldn't be complete without the story of a Massachusetts home health service who hired an employee as the caretaker for a 24-year-old cerebral palsy patient and the patient's grandmother. there was no background check performed. If they had performed one, they would have learned the caretaker had just gotten out of jail for murder. After about a month on the job, the caretaker was fired for not showing up for work, and he showed his displeasure by returning to the home and killing the 24-year-old and his grandmother. A negligent hiring lawsuit was filed, and the jury returned a $24 million verdict against the Home Health Service, which of course broke them and forced them out of business. I suspect that this visit to the Employers Hall of Horrors has gotten your attention, and I hope it's made you nervous. The common thread in these cases is that employers could have avoided those losses from negligent hiring claims, and you can see that just these claims that we discussed today account for over $50 million and could have been avoided with a simple background check costing maybe $50. And while we're talking about negligent hiring, let me give you a statistic that is truly mind-blowing. Negligent hiring lawsuits have become the plaintiff's attorney lawsuit of choice. Why, you might ask? Because employers lose those cases 79% of the time at an average cost of over $1 million. So I think we can all agree that we don't want to be part of a negligent hiring lawsuit. So let's take a look at what you can do to avoid becoming a defendant. And while we're doing that, we'll discuss a little bit about negligent hiring and what the law has to say about it. Well, let's start by taking a look at the elements of a negligent hiring case. First, the plaintiff must have suffered an injury as a result of your alleged negligence. For example, one of your drivers hits a pedestrian and injures or kills them. Or, if you're in the hospitality industry, one of your employees assaults a guest, such as the case of the Flagship Hotel in Galveston. Some other examples of injuries in which negligent hiring cases were brought included a company that brought a suit against Pinkerton's, its security company. In that case, it was found that the security guard who was Pinkerton's employee was a co-conspirator in thefts from the company in excess of $200,000. There was also the case of an industrial contractor who brought suit against his janitorial service company because a janitor stole cash from a desk and then burned the building down in order to cover up the theft. Another example of it is when the plaintiff, who was a hitchhiker, brought suit against the employer of a truck driver. In that case, a rape was committed by the truck driver after he offered the plaintiff a ride in his truck. And just one more frightening example in which the plaintiffs, who are the parents of a murder victim, brought suit against their daughter's employer. It seems a co-worker from her office murdered her at her own apartment after gaining access to her home address at work. So I think you get the idea. There are a whole lot of types of injuries that can result in one of those dreaded negligent hiring lawsuits. Next, there has to exist a duty of care that you owe to the plaintiff. And that means that the injured party has to show that there's some connection or relationship between that injured person and the employer. And as a result, the employer owed a duty of care. This can occur in a lot of different situations, such as coworkers on the job, a customer who may well have contacts with your employees, a tenant in an apartment building that may be injured by one of your maintenance workers, and any other situation in which your employees have some contact with other people. And you know what? That is almost every situation. While virtually every employer has some duty of care, there are industries in which that duty of care is magnified, such as workers that have contact with at-risk groups, such as children, sick people, or the elderly, or jobs like security guards, in which a person acts under what is called a color of authority, and wearing a uniform certainly creates that. Or jobs with special responsibilities, such as apartment managers, who may have a master key to all the apartments, and definitely jobs where workers enter homes, which may include any number of service companies, such as heating and air, plumbing, cleaning services, and so forth. After all, a person in their own home can be extraordinarily vulnerable because they're shielded from the public and not able to call for help. Third, it has to be proven that the employer breaches the duty of care. That happens when an employer has actual knowledge of the employee's unfitness or with the exercise of reasonable care would have knowledge that the employee was dangerous, unfit, are unqualified. What that really means is if the employer does not perform a reasonable background check, a jury could find a duty of care has been breached. To put it another way, juries generally find if the employer could have known, that translates to the employer should have known. And listen, folks, there's no reason to put yourself in that situation. And finally, the plaintiff has to show that the negligence on the part of the employer was the cause of the injury, which means that the injuries were a logical consequence of the employer's failure to perform due diligence. And one last thing, remembering that employers lose those cases 79% of the time, they're not terribly hard to prove, and you know that plaintiff's attorneys salivate at the idea of taking one of those cases. Just one last point on the whole due diligence issue, and this is important. Liability does not end with the hiring process. Employers can be sued and have been sued for failure to exercise due diligence in retention, supervision, or promotion. An employer can be liable for negligent retention when during the course of employment, the employer becomes aware or should have become aware of problems with an employee which indicated his unfitness, and the employer fails to take further action to prevent such conduct, such as investigation or discharge. For example, in a recent Minnesota case, the court ruled that the church could be sued for negligent retention if the church knew or should have known about the propensity of a church pastor to engage in sexual misconduct with persons that he was counseling. So what's the answer to this nightmare? Well, you could fire all your employees and do everything yourself, but that's not very practical. You could go out of business, just shut the doors and walk away, but then what? The way employers protect themselves from becoming a defendant is by performing due diligence when hiring an employee, and much of that due diligence involves performing background checking. Let's take a quick look at why employers perform pre-employment background checking. First, it really does discourage applicants with something to hide. Just having a pre-screening program is likely to discourage an applicant with a criminal background or falsified credentials. Along those lines, my recommendation is in big, bold letters in your interview area, you let people know that you do perform pre-employment background checking. Second, it does help to eliminate uncertainty in the hiring process. Look, knowledge is always power. And just listen to what background checks reveal that you would never know otherwise. These statistics are amazing. Over 40% of employment, education, and reference checks showed a difference between what the applicant provided and what the background checks revealed. There are even services today that will let an applicant who has falsified his work history pay a fee, and one of the service's employees will give a glowing reference over the phone. 45% of credit checks reveal a judgment, lien, or bankruptcy, or referral to a collection agency. 36% of driving records disclosed one or more violations or convictions. 9% of background checks revealed a criminal record within the last 7 years, with 24% of those having two or more adverse records. This is information that you vitally need in making hiring decisions. As I told you earlier, I certainly learned the hard way that you can't rely on gut instinct in deciding who to hire. And very importantly, it demonstrates due diligence, and due diligence is one major defense against the negligent hiring loss. Here's the deal. Employers have a reasonable duty of care in the hiring process, and that means that you as an employer must take reasonable steps to determine whether an employee is a good fit for the job. And finally, it really does discourage honesty in the application and the interview process. As an employer, you'll find that just having a background checking program will encourage applicants to be more forthcoming about their history. All right, Mr. or Ms. Employer, you've decided to background check. What kind of information is available for you? You will have access to civil lawsuits and liens, credit reports, criminal history, verification of education and credentials, international searches, merchant databases, driving records, past employment references, security clearances, social security number traces, and workers' compensation records when allowed by the state. This is a pretty broad menu, and I don't know any employer that utilizes all of these tools. The key is you have to utilize the right ones for your industry, and that certainly depends on exactly what you're trying to accomplish. For most employers, I recommend running at least two background searches for each applicant. First, I would run what we call our instant criminal nationwide criminal search plus alias. Different background checking companies use different names for this type of search, and truthfully, some are better than others, but done properly, this search is a powerful, virtually instant, multi-jurisdictional search of state and county criminal records. The database is compiled from counties, Department of Corrections, administrations of the court, and state sex offender registries from across the country, as well as national sex and violent offender databases. It also includes national and international terrorism sources, such as Office of Foreign Assets Control and the Foreign Nationals Database, which is a global report. As part of this report, it also pulls a Social Security number trace first, and then runs the National Criminal Sex Offender Global Report on all alias and maiden names from the Social Security number. This reduces the likelihood of deception by an applicant regarding any aliases they may have operated under. And the other background check that should be run is called a county criminal search. This is by far the most current and up-to-date criminal search, and it will reveal in the counties in which you run it whether the applicant has a felony, misdemeanor, or in some cases an infraction within the last 7 years or longer. Completed reports may include dates of arrest and filing charges, level of charges, disposition date, final disposition of charges, and any applicable sentence or penalty. With these two products, employers can be comfortable that they really are doing what they can to protect their employees and the public. And best of all, it's not that expensive. And whatever the charge, it's a lot less than that $1 million average loss in a negligent hiring lawsuit. Folks, don't take this lightly, and don't try to shortcut the process. I've seen people do that, and they generally wind up as plaintiffs. Could you do all this yourself? You could, but why in the world would you want to? I really believe that the right thing to do is hire a competent professional background checking firm whose whole life is wrapped up in providing the best and most current background checking information while keeping you out of legal trouble. Wait, I hear you saying, what kind of legal trouble? You convince me. I'm going to go out and find those records from these background checks myself. What in the world is wrong with that? Well, there's another landmine out there for employers who do the right thing and do background check, and it's called the Fair Credit Reporting Act, which is enforced by the Federal Trade Commission. And we're going to wind up today's presentation by looking at the effect that the Fair Credit Reporting Act has on background checking and on employers. And I think you'll agree that you're way better off to let a company that is used to wading through this minefield perform these background checks and keep you out of some of the difficulties that we're about to discuss. First, let's take a look at the four groups that are affected by the Fair Credit Reporting Act. The first of the four groups affected by the Fair Credit Reporting Act are consumer reporting agencies. These are third parties such as background checking firms or private investigators that provide consumer reports. Just a word of caution. A lot of private investigators believe they are not covered by the FCRA. But that just is not true if they perform background screening on a regular basis. That law applies to them. Second of the groups affected by the FCRA are users of consumer information. If you want to know who that is, just look in the mirror. Users are primarily employers who hire consumer reporting agencies to prepare consumer reports. Background checking falls under these consumer reports. The next group would be furnishers of consumer information. This would include credit card companies who provide payment histories to large national credit collection agencies, and also previous employers and schools. That is, anyone who is involved with consumer reporting agencies. and finally, consumers. The FCRA provides the consumer, or applicants in this case, with a myriad of rights in the process, and those rights are vigorously protected, and believe me, people who violate those rights are vigorously prosecuted. So as an employer who wants to be protected from negligent hiring lawsuits and show due diligence by performing pre-employment background checking, what do you have to do to ensure that you're not going to be prosecuted for violation of applicants' rights under the Fair Credit Reporting Act? The answer is you have to be FCRA compliant, and here's what it takes to do that. The first step is pretty simple. It's called employer certification. And basically, before ordering any background checks, the employer must certify in writing to the Consumer Reporting Agency, which is the background checking firm, that it will follow all the steps set out in the Fair Credit Reporting Act. And those steps are: they will use the information for employment purposes only. They agree they will not use the information in violation of any federal or state equal opportunity law. They agree to obtain all necessary disclosures and consents as required by the FCRA, and they agree to give the required notices in the event an adverse action is taken against an applicant in part or in whole as a result of the contents of the consumer report. And finally, they will give additional information required by law if an investigative consumer report is needed. The first step in being compliant, which is the employer certification, is rarely a problem. So let's start out by looking at the second step in compliance, and this is where employers get into trouble a lot, is the written release and disclosure. The law is specific about this, and there is no wiggle room. Before obtaining a consumer report from a consumer reporting agency, the employer has to obtain the applicant's written consent and must also provide the applicant with a clear and conspicuous, with conspicuous being really important, written disclosure that a background report may be requested. This disclosure cannot be buried in the application. It has to be in a separate and standalone document, and this is critical. So many employers have gotten into trouble by, for whatever reason, trying to keep it from being standalone, and you're not allowed to add extraneous clauses, such as releases of liability within that notice. Let's look at a couple of cases. Domino's settled a class action lawsuit for Fair Credit Reporting Act violations for $2.5 million for creating a release of liability in a release and disclosure form. New England Motor Freight recently settled a class action lawsuit for $870,000 with a group of 7,000 drivers who claim that the company denied them employment after conducting criminal background checks and obtaining credit reports and driver history reports without their authorization. Kmart agreed to pay $3 million for Fair Credit Reporting Act background checking violations, alleging the company failed to properly warn 60,000 job applicants that they could be denied employment based on background checks. So, can we all agree that violation of the Fair Credit Reporting Act has its own hall of horrors? And believe me, there are many more cases and many more coming. Now, let's take a look at the third step in compliance, which is something that a lot of employers and background checking firms ignore, and that's called the pre-adverse notice. When an employer receives a consumer report and decides not to hire the applicant based on the report, the applicant has certain rights. If the adverse action is even partially as a result of the consumer report, then the applicant is entitled to certain documents. At this point, something called a pre-adverse notice to the applicant must be sent to the applicant, and the notice must include a copy of the consumer report and a document entitled Summary of Your Rights Under the Fair Credit Reporting Act. This is done to give the applicant an opportunity to see the report, and if it is at all inaccurate or incomplete, the applicant can then contact the consumer reporting agency to dispute what is in the report. If this step were not in place, applicants could be denied employment without knowing that they were victims of inaccurate or incomplete data. In most cases, the applicant really has very little to complain about. But there have been times when an applicant really is a victim of some type of error. For example, just recently a class action lawsuit was filed against Aaron's Home Rentals for willful violations of the Fair Credit Reporting Act. It is alleged the applicant, named Daniel Antoine, responded to an ad on CareerBuilder and was contacted by Aaron's to come into one of their stores in Kansas City for an interview. At the end of the interview, Antoine was informed that he would be hired, but first they needed to perform a background check. After the background check was run, Antoine was notified that he would not be hired because of information contained in the background check. He was not provided with a copy of the report or description of his rights under the FCRA. In fact, he was not provided with a copy of the report until he requested it from the background checking company some days later. The background check, according to the complaint, contained inaccurate information, which suggested that Antoine had a felony conviction, which was not accurate. The key here is that Aaron's did not send a pre-adverse notice with a copy of the report and a copy of his rights as required under the Act, nor did they ever send a final adverse notice, and as a result, Antoine was denied employment because he was never given an opportunity to dispute the contents of the report. This lawsuit is filed on behalf of Antoine and all other Aaron's applicants all over the country. Look, we don't know how this lawsuit will come out, whether there will be a $2 million judgment, a $200,000 judgment, or no judgment at all. But one thing is for sure, the lawsuit will result in massive legal costs and loss of productive time on the part of Aaron's staff. Did they really fail to send the required notices? I don't know, but I'm a big proponent of if there's smoke, there's likely to be fire. Just this week, Dollar General agreed to settle a class action lawsuit which claimed they failed to send pre-adverse notices to applicants who were rejected for employment, and it cost Dollar General $4 million. These lawsuits keep coming. Employers, let's pay attention to the details. If after sending out the pre-adverse notice, the employer intends to make a final decision not to hire, the employers are required to take one more step. The employer must send the applicant a notice of final adverse action informing the job applicant that the employer has made a final decision and must provide a copy of the summary of his rights again. It does seem slightly bizarre that Congress intended that applicants be notified twice, both before an adverse action and after. They've gone to this length to give the applicant the maximum opportunity to correct any incomplete or inaccurate reports that might affect their ability to find employment. A real dilemma rears its head when an employer actually hires an employee and allows him to begin work before the background check is complete, and then finds the background check uncovers negative information that would have prevented the applicant from being hired. The first instinct in these cases is to call the person in, hand them the report, the final paycheck, and both letters at one time, and send them on their way. This approach, while practical, does not give the applicant a reasonable time to review and respond to the report, and so their rights under the Fair Credit Reporting Act may be violated. This procedure is to give the employee their report, a statement of their rights, the pre-adverse letter, and an opportunity to respond. The second letter should be sent only after a reasonable period of time has passed, and the employees have the opportunity to respond but didn't. This seems like a pain, but sometimes operating within the FCRA can be uncomfortable. But it's way better than the litigation offered by the alternative. I always get questions from my clients about adverse notices. Here's an example. Sandy, I have two applicants for a position. I do background checks on both of them, and they both have clean records. I make a decision to hire one of them because I thought he was a better candidate. Do I still have to send out adverse notices, both pre-adverse and final, even though my decision not to hire him had nothing to do with his background check results? Great question. And the answer is, drumroll please, it depends. Theoretically, because the background check played no part in the decision, you can bypass the adverse notices. The whole purpose of the pre-adverse notice is to give the applicant an opportunity to deal with any report that he thinks is incorrect. So as a result, even if a minute portion of your decision had to do with the report, the adverse notices should be sent. But let's assume that you do not send the adverse notices because the report played no part whatsoever in your decision. Here's what can happen. We have an issue with proof. The rejected applicant may claim that your argument that the report had nothing to do with this decision is just baloney, and this is especially important if the applicant is part of a protected class and claims that the decision not to hire was discrimination. The chances are good that a good plaintiff's attorney would latch on to the fact there was no adverse notice sent and sue you on the basis of an FCRA violation. You could also have to deal with the issue of what is adverse. For example, if a credit report was run, and even though there are no late payments or charge-offs, there is a job title that is different from the one the applicant put on his application. The applicant's attorney could claim that the applicant was put in an unfair position because he wasn't given the chance to correct bad information. And what's that sound I hear? Oh, it's the sound of money, your money, flying out the window. You know what? We're talking about risk management. And for my money, sending out adverse notices, regardless of whether the report played any part of the hiring decision, is quick and painless. Any professional background checking firm will provide you with those forms. And for my clients, I advise them to send those notices out anytime they make a decision not to hire, regardless of whether the hiring decision had anything to do with the report. One last hurdle for you to consider in your attempts to be FCRA compliant is that the background checking results that you receive have to be both accurate and relevant. And one of the reasons that is true is that the Fair Credit Reporting Act requires it. Employers have to be very sure that when they perform a background check and a criminal record is uncovered, they are not seeing a false positive. A false positive occurs when an applicant is falsely identified as having a criminal record. A perfect example of that is the case of Antoine in the class action lawsuit against Aaron's, or it could be reporting an offense as a felony, which is really a misdemeanor, or misrepresenting information about the offense, such as the sentence or terms of probation that makes the offense look more serious. The Fair Credit Reporting Act requires that consumer reporting agencies and background checking firms adopt reasonable procedures to ensure that only information relevant to the applicant is reported. Competent and professional background checking firms take steps to ensure that this takes place. Competent background checking firms should have fully staffed compliance departments staffed by licensed private investigators who ensure the validity of every negative report. Look, I know this is a lot of information, and I hope that it hasn't put you to sleep or caused you to zone out, because the truth is that the very future of your business can depend on you protecting you and your company from the potential of damaging litigation that is ever present when you're making hiring decisions. It's almost a darned if you do and darned if you don't situation. If you perform due diligence and perform pre-employment background screening, you do protect yourself from negligent hiring lawsuits. But then, if you don't follow all the rules, you subject yourself to class action lawsuits of the type we've discussed for Fair Credit Reporting Act violations. Here's my advice. Just be prudent. Take the best possible step and align yourself with a competent professional background checking firm to help guide you through these minefields. And one last piece of advice. Be very careful in selecting your background checking partner. Bigger is not always better. There's nothing inherently wrong with a very large background checking firm, but there have been instances in which they lost focus on the individual customer. And when choosing a background checking firm, cheaper is not always better. Background checking is not a commodity. What you are really buying is protection from the things we discussed today, and you have to be sure that the firm you employ has a fully staffed legal and compliance department so that you can be comfortable that you're receiving great information so you can make great hiring decisions and stay out of court. And one last thing. Employee problems are always caused by problem employees. Good, solid, professionally performed background checking can help you avoid those problem employees, keep you out of court, and out of trouble. Thank you very much for your attention today.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Please feel free to give us a call at 877-202-8891. The vision of Grandy & Associates is quite simple. We teach companies how to run profitable businesses. For more information on how we do that, check out our website at www.grandyassociates.com or give us a call at 1-877-202-8891. Profit University Audio Series is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line at 1-877-202-8891. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.